the variant of He Who Remains, the one he's been talking about, the one that he's so afraid of, is Kang.
Great.
Kang is bent on
Thank
destruction.
God.
Oh, they said the K word.
Jonathan does.
They said it.
I don't
it.
Know why people were doubting this.
Kang lives in so many iterations. As He Who Remains says, reincarnation, ooh, baby.
Hey, reincarnation, baby.
Reincarnation, baby. How long will we get to dance with this devil in the right. details?
Hopefully for so the excited. Next 20 years. I'm right for 20 years of Majors Kang.
Welcome back to New Rockstars. As we move on from Loki, one of our guides through the multiverse will be Kang. Mm. But will this multiverse crisis be resolved in the next few years in time for a new big bad to arise? Or are we now living permanently in a Marvel Cinematic Multiverse? Mm. How long is He Who Remains remaining? Is he, you know, renting month to month, or is he executing squatter's rights? This is Inside Marvel, our weekly Marvel discussion. We are currently in between Loki and Marvel's What If, but there's still so much to talk about. I'm Eric Voss, here with MT. How you feeling, MT?
I'm feeling good. I like the rent metaphor for Kang. I hope that Spider-Man from the Raimi trilogy's landlord is the landlord of the multiverse, because that'd be hilarious.
Yeah. Rent! So Loki's now in the rearview mirror, but objects seem closer than they appear, of course, including the question of how permanent the chaos of the broken timeline will be in the MCU. We are going to talk about Kang's future and who could be behind the curtain that's behind him. How many layers of curtains are we dealing with? Plus, other updates on Spider-Man No Way Home, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania, and Moon Knight, but first, if you're still hoping to get the latest obsession Loki out of time shirt for Loki, this is your last call.
Sizes and colors are running out.
Last call. But don't forget to also grab our newest addition to the latest obsession collection, Black Widow's The Red Deep. Mm. Both of these awesome shirts will soon be locked away in the vault or possibly pruned from the timeline forever. Keep an eye out for our new releases. We're planning on launching two brand new latest obsession shirts for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. One based on the Disney Plus series Marvel's What If, and another that will drop as an exciting surprise. So stay tuned and check out all great merch options here at newrockstarsmerch.com. But MT, what's our big question this week?
Well, our big question for today is, what is Marvel's plan for Kang? Is he the new Thanos, or will he transition us to another villain who will be the next Thanos?
Yeah, so we've been seeing some interesting quotes from cast and crew in the days since the finale. Like the director, Kate Herron, said that the casting of Jonathan Majors was a decision that was made by Marvel Studios, Quantumania director Peyton Reed, and herself. Now, she didn't mention any other directors being part of that decision. Interestingly, not John Watts or any of the directors on any other Disney Plus show. But John Watts is doing Spider-Man No Way Home, and he's also doing the next Fantastic Four movie. So he is someone who you would think that that Marvel has in mind for future plans. And Kang, in the comics, is more of a villain to the Fantastic Four than the Avengers. But Kang is at least confirmed to appear in Quantumania, most likely in Loki Season 2, and still a very good chance to be the villain of John Watts' Fantastic Four film. Maybe they just didn't hire him yet for that movie's title. And also, there's probably a good chance we're going to see a Young Avengers title in the works. We have pretty much all the Young Avengers characters cast in the MCU. And perhaps a fifth Avengers film, like Secret Invasion. But the question, MT, I think, is how long the MCU will exist as this chaotic multiverse. Mm. Like, we know some titles will embrace the multiverse, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, No Way Home, but others, good chance, will be unaffected by the multiverse events. Titles like Shang-Chi, Secret Invasion, Thor Love and Thunder, Guardians Volume 3, which James Gunn has said has been written in its present form for years before, you know, Marvel unleashed this multiverse. Right. Now, we have heard some unconfirmed talk from some sources based off of people who work here at New Rockstars who have some, but none of it's confirmed. So
it's Carmen San Diego. Don't lie to them. It's Carmen San Diego.
Right. We got some deep throats. I don't trust any of these sources currently to really hang any hats on this, but just some gossip that the TVA might appear in a Marvel title before Loki Season 2. Grain of salt. Big grain of salt, okay?
Big grain
But really, when it comes to Kang and the multiverse, Marvel, I believe, has two paths before it. There is a 4-year multiverse plan and a 10-year multiverse plan.
I feel like I'm getting a mortgage or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Right. But both are great deals. You got to act now. The four-year plan would treat the multiverse as a transitional crisis touched on in titles like No Way Home, Multiverse of Madness, Quantumania, Fantastic Four, maybe Deadpool 3, Avengers Secret Wars, and they kind of wrap up by like 2025. And right. this would end with the multiverse, I would think, condensing back into one shared universe. Really, this would just be like a phase four. They've been, they haven't really used the term phase four a lot. We don't know if it's going to be like another phase that tends to last 4 or 5 years, or just like, now, for the foreseeable future, this is just what we're in now. But then after that, I think, is when we would move on to the X-Men, who might get introduced in-universe as opposed to from another universe. And then I think in that case, Kang would be thwarted or downgraded to like a Red Skull or Loki-level villain in the universe, but really leave the door open for like Doctor Doom or Galactus or Magneto or Mephisto or someone like that to be the main primary villain. So that would be the four-year plan. Contrastingly, the 10-year plan would treat the multiverse as really just the new normal. Like, all upcoming MCU stories would exist either because of or in spite of the existence of a fractured multiverse. But either way, in a multiversal context that could be used to explain the movie or TV show's interconnectivity or explain its Elseworld independence. This version of it would probably use the multiverse to justify the X-Men and would give us a better chance of seeing characters like Evan Peters or Michael Fassbender, people from that universe bridging over with ours. And then compared to the Infinity Saga, this would just be our multiverse saga. The Infinity Saga lasted roughly 10 years, so would this. And in this version of it, Kang might not be the only villain, but he would be the most fearsome threat for all of this period, because he can just show up in so many different forms.
Yeah.
It just depends on, I don't know if Marvel's made up its mind yet. I think they're probably weighing both of these versions. I think they're probably playing a wait and see game currently, because as James Gunn said this week, we'll talk about this later in the episode, the superhero genre might not be something that lasts forever. And you got to imagine Marvel Studios is probably going to want to go for broke and adapt a lot of these popular things while they are still popular in pop culture. We don't know if, you know, superhero movies are just going to be like action movies, and action movies are always popular, you know, since the 80s, really the 70s. But the 80s kind of distilled what action movie formulas were. Or audiences will just look at it as like sci-fi or just escapist fantasy. Or if it's going to be something like the Western. And the Western really did peak at some point and kind of went out of style. And not to say that the Western movie genre is gone and done with. Obviously, we have movies like the Coen brothers make perfectly great Westerns. Unforgiven in the 90s was kind of a deconstruction Western.
We got that dope black cowboy movie coming out on Netflix that I'm totally forgetting the name of, but it looks amazing.
But Western movies all kind of have to be, they're all deconstructions rather than just like, you know, back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, like Westerns were all over the place and you could just pump out a formulaic Western and audiences would see it. That's not really the case anymore. But MT, I want to ask you, which of these two paths, the 4-year plan or the 10-year plan, do you think Marvel Studios might be leaning towards? And which plan do you want to be the case?
I think that it might be more of a 10-year plan type of scenario. Because like, you know, I feel like, you know, this is Marvel's way of, like you said, integrating the X-Men and sort of making the Sony and Fox universes and the Marvel Studio universes into one shared universe and having the general public understand the difference in like how everything's been since, you know, 2000, or whenever the first X-Men movie came out. Because to this point, it's been very confusing for a lot for the general audience. It's like, wait, why isn't Professor X with you know, the Avengers? Like, what's going on? Like, why isn't Wolverine here? And so this with Loki season one, we're getting the introduction of the multiverse and we're getting the public understanding there. And I think this is just very much the beginning of, you know, greater tales being told, with the multiverse being the offshoot. So like with Kang is very much the like the beginning phases of a bigger multiversal story. So we're gonna get Kang, but then I think that we're gonna transition into a Secret Wars, into maybe like, you know, the power of the Beyonders that, you know, Doom wields when he becomes God Doom in the Secret Wars story from 2015. So, you know, I think that Kang is just, you know, he's definitely going to be the Ant-Man villain. We're definitely going to see that play out. But after Kang is defeated, I think that we're gonna just move forward towards some more multiversal threats, because like the Ancient One said in Doctor Strange 1, if you knew that all the threats in the multiverse, you would run away in terror. And then at the end of Doctor Strange 1, Wong says that because the Ancient One is dead, everyone in the multiverse is gonna get word of this and then want to converge onto our reality. So we have multiversal threats pretty much been coming to us. Since Doctor Strange 1, since the death of the Ancient One. So like, Marvel Studios has definitely been planting the seeds towards more bigger cosmic threats on the horizon. So like, we're talking like, you know, maybe a Builder War, or maybe a war with the Annihilation Wave, because we have the Fantastic Four coming up. But yeah, I think it's more of a 10-year plan. Sorry, just rambling at this point.
I ramble all the time, baby. We were born rambling men.
Yeah, we just love nerd shit, man.
We do. But I think you're right. I don't know if general audiences feel like a confusion of why isn't Wolverine in this. I think that's something that it's limited to people like us in the bubble. But I think like most people who watch Marvel movies, they just are, you know, they take what they get. And they'll just kind of like take it one step at a time rather than feeling like they are being deprived of anything.
Yeah.
But I do think that right now Marvel's kind of in a wait and see approach. Mm. They probably don't want to use a crass term, blow their wad on multiverse too soon. I think they want to like, you know, just take it cautiously a little bit at a time. But I think what we saw with Jonathan Majors, he's such a great actor. He could be what Loki has been, just kind of one of these villains who shows up in little bits and pieces here. And, you know, I think what Kevin Feige's ultimate dream has been to make the Marvel Cinematic Universe everything that Marvel readers have loved about the comics, which is just a sense of like, we don't always need to have a bird's eye view of the exact stakes from world to world. But once you are in one particular story, you're able to kind of put up blinders to the stakes in the context of everything else of the world and just stay focused on this one character's journey moment to moment. So that might mean the MCU over the next 4 to 10 years might not have an exact sense of continuity that it once had in the Infinity Saga. But potentially, I think, why not go for broke and just see how far you can stretch it and how things relate? Like, I think we will probably see something like the Captain Britain Corps, right? Or like the Spider-Verse, right? It's gonna complicated and crazy and messy. But like, I never would have thought that they could have adapted an Infinity War saga brought in all these characters and have them talk to each other and they all still kind of retain their individual identity. So I think Marvel's doubling down, it looks like. And while I do think there will be other villains beyond Kang, I don't think we're going to see a 4-year plan where Kang is done and then one new big bad is introduced, because Marvel's already done that with Thanos. I think instead what you're going to see is like more of a 10-year plan. And then Kang is one villain. But then like in certain movies, yeah, as you said, there's an Annihilation situation. There's Doctor Doom. And so I don't think that when we get a Secret Wars movie, it's going to be Kang. I think it's going to be Doom.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
I don't think they're just going to use Kang for everything.
Oh,
I think they're
going to
use him
just
like
lazy.
Scalpel.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Like, cast other people. Like, who knows how long superhero movies are going to be popular. So now that you own Doctor Doom again, don't wait. I don't think Feige wants to wait.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think Doom is very much on the horizon, and he's going to be a huge driving force because, you know, like you said, with Kevin Feige has been wanting these Fox properties so much. And, like, you can tell that he's been wanting to have the Fantastic Four and to treat them right. So, like, Doom is definitely going to be a major force within the MCU when he is introduced. But, like, also, another thing that we have to consider here is that, like, Disney Plus and what Marvel Studios is doing with Disney Plus is still rather new. And what we understand the MCU now is going to be a lot different than what we've experienced in the last 10 years. Because the last 10 years, we've had only movies. But now the MCU is sort of progressing at a much faster clip because we have movies and we also have these shows. And so we're getting so much. We're so blessed, which is amazing. But like, I think that that might sort of, that may end up condensing phases or condensing how long phases go or how long sagas even go in terms of time, because we're now getting more stories being told in, you know, per year, which is great.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think phases were something that Feige did to make it clear to shareholders and investors how what his plan was. But now that he can say, look, we have a streaming app, we can release content whenever we want multiple times a year. Like, realistically, we're looking at a point to where every week with minor interruptions, we'll have a new piece of MCU lore coming into our lives. That, I think, is even more preferable to investors and shareholders, because then it's just like forever in perpetuity, we will have new content coming out. Why do we need to break this up into phases anymore?
Right.
This could just be as popular for as long as we can convince people to subscribe to Disney Plus to get this stuff.
Yeah.
And get $8 a month out of them. And then potentially a lot more.
They're it's definitely hiking up.
$18, $30. Sorry, folks. We're going to have to start paying a lot more for this.
Oh, yeah. If they're going to keep shelling out all this money for all these high quality shows, like, we're going to have to cough it up.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to some people who helped us make this episode. We want to thank Feels for sponsoring this episode. CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel. Stress, anxiety, pain, other things that make you feel bad. Well, Feels is a better way to feel better. Feels is a premium CBD that will help to keep your head clear and feel your best. It's hassle-free and delivered directly to your door. Become a member and get 50% off your first order. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover or addiction. I've used CBD in the past to help with aches and pains, and a bunch of us here at New Rockstars are big fans of CBD. Place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. Feels offers a free CBD hotline and a dedicated customer service team to help guide your personal experience so that you find a perfect dose. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/marvel, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/Marvel to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/Marvel. We also want to thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this video. Our friends at Blue Chew have a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no doctor's office or pharmacy trips. It ships right to your door in a discreet package. You sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you receive your prescription within days. Their licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength. And Blue Chew is chewable, just like it says in the name, which is great news for folks that don't like swallowing pills. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we've got a special deal for our audience. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code of Inside Marvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Inside Marvel to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the show. And thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this show. We've all experienced times when something was interfering with our happiness or preventing us from achieving our goals. Well, BetterHelp is here to help. They assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you can start communicating with in under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. They have a broad range of expertise available for clients worldwide. Log into your account anytime and schedule weekly video or phone sessions. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Check out the reviews section of their website for testimonials from folks who have gotten something from their service. Visit BetterHelp.com/Marvel. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And here's a special offer for the Inside Marvel audience. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Marvel. All right, MT, shifting gears here. Why do we still not have a Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, and when do you think we will get it?
Well, I think the answer is simple, Eric. I think Sony just wants us to suffer. I think that's just what's going on here. no, I think, honestly, it's like sort of half true there, because like, they don't have to release the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer so soon, because we all want it so badly. Like, if you go to Twitter.com, it is all anyone is talking about in the nerds corner of Twitter. And like, you know, we're sort of doing free marketing for them in a way. So it's just like, hey, everyone's thinking about No Way Home. Everyone's waiting for it. So they're sort of just like, hold. And then they're going to release it. So we're going to get it very soon, because obviously No Way Home is coming out you know, pretty freaking soon. But God, I don't know exactly when. What do you think? Why do you think that we haven't seen one yet?
Because no one said that we would, I think, right? Like, no one from Sony promised us that we would get a trailer. Like, I feel bad because obviously I want to see it. But I think, yeah, you're right. I think Sony recognizes that there's a whole industry of people like us and other channels like us and other scoopers who make these promises and use that to, you know, get traffic to their channels and their websites. And then they're making this up based on nothing. They're saying, I have a source that says the trailer will come out tomorrow. And then inevitably it's wrong. I mean, this movie's not coming out until December. We are at the end of July right now. Like, I would, you know, I could totally see this trailer not dropping until September or October. Like, if you think this time last year, for all the big stuff that Marvel was announcing for the fourth quarter, like, we didn't see a Mandalorian or a WandaVision trailer until October, right? You know, and we kept saying, oh, it's going to come next week. These things are going to happen by the end of the year. It has to come next week. And then not till October did we get anything. So, yeah, unfortunately, we may have to wait a bit longer. I know. I want to know more about this movie, too. But, yeah, Sony's marketing is weird. So just to, like, remind you guys, the people who cut trailers for Sony, every time, whether it's Venom Let There Be Carnage or this Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer, their marketing department is just a bit weird. They often seem to be out of sync with their own directors and their own writers and their own team that makes these movies. And often the tone of their trailers and the timing of their releases is just odd. And it doesn't have this wonderful synergy that the Walt Disney Corporation seems to have with, like, cutting these trailers that, like, seem to read their fans' minds and know exactly what we want. So, like, I would even say brace yourself for the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer to just be a bit disappointing, to not be something that you would imagine John Watts cutting together, because I don't know what it is. Sony trailers are often just weird. They drop in the middle of the freaking night sometimes. It's not always, like, going to be synced with a big Disney release or an ABC production broadcast on TV, because Disney and Sony are different studios. And with these, like, co-produced movies of these Spider-Man movies, Disney doesn't have any say really on how it's marketed. That's all Sony. So just remind yourselves of the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer, of the Spider-Man Far From Home trailers. They were just, like, a little weird. They didn't always, like... I don't want to get too much into it. I think I just remember seeing the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer and being like, really? They're using that song? Like, all right, I'll go watch this movie, but it looks kind of dumb. And then the movies came out and they were great. Because John Watts is a great director. But yeah, I'm not going to try to read Sony marketing's mind on how they're going to release this trailer. I've been burned too many times.
I just really hope that, you know, my biggest concern with trailers for the initial trailer for, like, big properties like Spider-Man is that, you know, they rely so much on name recognition and all of that in crafting their trailer, so that they just don't show us anything. It's just like, here's the back of Spider-Man, and now you're excited. And, like, we didn't show you, like plot or, like, what's going on with the, like, what's going on in the story of this movie. It's just like, oh, we're going to tease you with, like, here's Spider-Man swinging. And then here's, like, I don't know, some electricity going on, because, like, that's sort of hinting at Electro. And then it's going to make our jobs to, like, decipher all the little cryptic clues, and, like, they're not going to show us anything. So that's my biggest concern. Please just show us what this movie's going to be about. And also, I'm also looking forward to the amazing posters that we're going to get from Sony.
Because their posters are always... posters.
Their posters are always so weird and terrible, but it's always
hilarious.
I'm going to
make a prediction now that the poster they release will not be as good as the fake fan-made posters that we've seen so far.
We're going to be like, why can't
we just use these instead?
Right, I co-sign that. I like the fake ones.
All right, some other news we got from the MCU this week. Michaela Cole from I May Destroy You, from Black Mirror, a bunch of stuff, great actress, was cast in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. What role do you think she's going to play, MT?
See, this is really interesting, because I've been sort of, like, racking my head around this. And I don't really know exactly what role she would play, but it would be really, really fun if she were playing Killmonger's mother. Because in the MCU, I think that in canon, she died in prison, if I'm not mistaken. While, you know, and then, you know, his father was, Eric's father was doing, you know, criminal stuff against Wakanda. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it'll probably be a flashback sequence where she's playing Killmonger's mom, because we don't see that character at all. And I feel like her character is really interesting. It'd be really cool to see her pop up and be like, "You killed my baby. I can't believe y'all killed my baby. Now y'all gonna die."
The popular theory is Storm, right? Aurora Monroe. Mm. Yeah. I just don't know. I think Michaela Cole would be a great Storm. Don't get me wrong. I just think, like, the only reason you would have Storm in a Black Panther movie is to see her relationship with T'Challa. And if T'Challa's not going to be in this movie, I don't know if you can really... I mean, you could try. I don't know what story you would tell otherwise.
Yeah.
I think, like, her hair has been cut short in a lot of her past roles. I would imagine, like, a new member of the Dora Milaje. Right? Just because, like, if you think, like, in I May Destroy You, when her character had that hair, like, she's a great head, is what I'm saying. She's got a great head. She could play a great member of the Dora Milaje.
I think that a Dora Milaje scenario is most likely, considering that, you know, that's the nature of, like, the Black women in Wakandan society. They're usually the strong soldier-type figures. So I feel like Dora Milaje would be interesting. I think it would be really interesting if she was like a competition for Okoye, like, in a way, or she's trying to gun for Okoye's top spot or something. Like, that'd be really cool to see, like, see them go at it. I don't know. But she could be literally anyone.
I mean, depending on, we still don't know what the story is going to be about. Like, if it does show, if it's about Wakanda forever, maybe this is about, like, the collapse of Wakanda society into civil war or something like that. And maybe there's, like, a divide between the Dora Milaje, that, like, there's some warring sides between the ranks, or among the ranks of that particular group. And that Michaela Cole could play a rival to Danai Gurira's character and Ao as well. We'll see. But she's a great actress. I'm excited to see what role she ends up playing. Let's move on to Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Peyton Reed tweeted this week that they're beginning production. He had this terrifying stuffed rabbit sitting next to a tank labeled Biohazard. So any new thoughts on what Quantumania could be after the Loki finale as we're moving forward?
Well, I first of all, I love that picture, because I love that little bunny from Ant-Man 1, because that's the bunny that Ant-Man, Scott Lang, gives his daughter in the first movie for her birthday party. But in regards to any new thoughts on Quantumania after the Loki finale, I mean, you know, like I've been saying before, I definitely think we're going to see Kang in Quantumania, in Kid Kang, obviously, because, like, obviously Kang's going to be in Quantumania because he's going to be the main villain. But I think we're going to see a younger version of Kang in Quantumania, as basically that Iron Lad version of Kang. And those seeds are going to be planted in Quantumania, because in the comics, Kang, young Kang, and Stature, who is Cassie Lang in the Ant-Man series, have a sort of like a relationship thing going, but they're also Young Avengers together. And so I think that Cassie will probably meet a variant of Kang, but that's pretty much my only, and then we're probably going to see lots of variants of Kang, because of the name Quantumania, they're probably going to be jumping to different universes all over the place, different timelines or whatever. And so we're probably going to see a ton of different Kangs, as Kang is this main villain. So it will probably be like this mini army of Kangs that Scott is trying to fight.
Yeah, I agree. I think Quantumania is just going to be centered, or at least take place partly, in that city in the background of the Quantum Realm, whether it's Chronopolis or whatever it is. And I think the Kang variant we'll see in this one will be Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't think there's going to be any confusion about it. Like, that's the villain.
Yeah.
You're right. I think there's going to be alternate versions of him that may be warring with himself. But yeah, I think the spinoff from this movie will be Young Avengers, you know, and I think Cassie Lang, Stature, is going to be the lead of that. And I think we're going to meet young Nathaniel Richards, as you said. They might even use that version of, like, how they had that mistake version of quantum technology that de-age people or age people up. Like, maybe that's the way we get Kang, is that some Kang variant gets de-aged. And then so we get a young Nathaniel Richards out of that.
That'd be fun. I would love that. Yeah.
I just hope that they don't let go of that particular... Like, I hope that wasn't just, like, a one-off scene. I'd love to see that.
I know, like, that, way. Like, implemented more in the MCU. It's like, you just solved the cure to aging, like, by accident.
Yeah, cure to a lot of stuff. You can make someone immortal that way.
Exactly, like, forever. Yeah. Quick question, though. What do you think are the odds of us going to Spider-Man 2099's universe in Quantumania?
I think it's more likely we'd see that in No Way Home than in Quantumania. Yeah. Right? I do think a Miguel O'Hara showing up in the MCU is possible. It would just have to be through one of these Sony properties, I would imagine.
Because, like, we do know that Sony and Marvel have this new deal going on, and, like, we don't exactly know what the deal entails. So it'd be really interesting if more Spider-Man stuff got implemented in solo Marvel projects more.
I mean, I love it. I love it. It's just Sony's still pretty protective of it. Like, it seems like anytime they share the Spider-Man name, it's just Peter Parker for now.
It's true.
Like I don't know if they're going to let Miles Morales show up, like, other than mention until, like, we don't have Peter Parker anymore. But that's going to be a whole new deal that I think Disney has to sign with Sony. I think this releasing their titles on Disney Plus is one thing, but actually being written into their movies is a whole other thing that it's still going to be baby steps. I want to ask you about this quote from James Gunn in an interview for the Suicide Squad this week. He was asked kind of about the superhero film genre, and he said, quote, "We know about the way cowboy films went and the way war films went. I don't know. I think you don't have to be a genius to put two and two together and see that there's a cycle to those sorts of films, and that the only hope for the future of the comic book and superhero films is to change them up. They're really dumb, and they're mostly boring for me right now," end quote. Now, there's probably a context to which James Gunn was saying that this is the same guy who's making the Suicide Squad and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Obviously, he's not saying all superhero movies are dumb and boring. I think he's just saying to change things up, to keep it fresh and original, as he's done in all of his superhero movies. But what are your thoughts on this, MT?
I think James Gunn's right on the money there. I think that he's exactly right. And I think we're starting to see it as superhero films have gotten more popular in the public eye, with other studios who are not Marvel Studios, like trying to hop into that that superhero hype and not actually getting into it because they don't understand that, you know, superhero films have been around for so long and that Marvel Studios is starting to evolve the way that they show these films. Whereas these studios are like, hey, we just slap tights on them, right? And like, it's fine. And people will just come see it. No, it's like, we need to continue evolving and making these stories and with these characters new. For example, Thor Ragnarok. Like, the Thor series was kind of struggling up until that point, and they reinvented it and made this a crazy take on the Ragnarok story. That's what you need to do to keep things fresh and new, and that's what will keep people interested in the MCU. That's why we got Loki. That's why Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is probably going to be crazy. That's why Marvel is even doing this multiverse stuff to begin with, because they're flipping things up. Like, the Marvel Universe, everyone's like, yeah, we know what the Marvel Universe is. We have a pretty good idea. Nope, we about to give you Alligator Loki and all sorts of weird shit because, like, we flipping up the game and keeping things interesting. And, like, I think that is what's going to be the difference between, you know, the Western genre and, you know, the superhero genre.
Yeah, I think he's right that you do have to change things up. I disagree with him on them being comparable to Western films and war films, though. I don't know if it's a passing fad. I think the fact that, you know, the first Superman movie, we had the Batman series, we had other Batman movies in the past, but really the superhero movies as, like, major motion pictures. It's Richard Donner's Superman. We had some Superman movies through the 80s. We had the Tim Burton Batman films through the 80s and 90s. And then we had kind of this Marvel renaissance that really started with Blade, you know, but then Blade led to X-Men and Sony Spider-Man throughout the 2000s, and then the MCU launched. I think the difference is the level of saturation to have multiple of these movies per year, but they keep just making more and more money. I don't know if that's a bubble. I think they're already transforming and trying new things, even before James Gunn directed Guardians of the Galaxy. But, like, you know, if you look at the Western film genre, like, it did legitimately go out of style. And I don't know if superhero movies are a genre in the same way. Because within the superhero movies, you get heist movies. You get period pieces. You get spy thrillers. You get, like, comedies. Straight up, like, weird Douglas Adams comedies. As what, like, Thor Ragnarok and Guardians of the Galaxy have been. And what I would say Loki is. You have, like, kind of romantic dramas that feel like something that Spike Jones would do is what WandaVision was. So I don't know if you can really compare them, but the Western film genre did go out of style for sure. But it's still around. It just takes new forms. And one of my favorite movies is Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. And that is a deconstruction of the Western film genre and of stories in general, and mythology. And the superhero movies already kind of went through that. James Mangold's Logan was almost beat for beat Unforgiven. I highly recommend, if you have like a double feature night, watch Unforgiven and then watch Logan, or watch one of the two back to back. You'll see the parallels and you'll love both movies even more than you thought. So yeah, I think, and then things like The Dark Knight, that was a deconstruction of the Batman mythology 6 years before Guardians of the Galaxy was. So yeah, I don't think they have to go out of style, but I do think I don't think there's like a pressure cooker limit. I think people will still, you can still make a straight up formulaic Marvel movie, and I think people will watch it 10 years from now. The IP is that strong. It's unprecedented, but I don't think everything is a bubble.
This is true. And I think that with the fact that we have a cinematic universe and we have this narrative that is being told over such a long period of time with no end in sight, I think that intrigue there is what's going to keep superhero films alive.
We'll leave it there for this episode of Inside Marvel, but MT and I are going to be back next Wednesday with our preview from Marvel's What If on Disney Plus. Why this anthology series will actually be essential viewing to prepare for titles like Multiverse of Madness. So stay tuned for that. Don't forget to check out our many great merch options at NewRockStarsMerch.com. Follow MT at Mastertainment. Follow me at EA Voss. Follow NewRockStar. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.